A Friday on Scoops with DannyMac.com, and that means we have the chance to visit, as always, with Ben Frederickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and this is brought to you by our good friends at Henderson and Watercutty, law firm based right here in St. Louis. A couple of St. Louis guys helping out folks in both Missouri and Illinois. See what they offer you, STLCriminalDefense.com. STLCriminalDefense.com, they are your lawyer for anything. Anything. They can help you out. STLCriminalDefense.com, 365 days, 7 days a week. I should mention that the good folks, Ben Frederickson at Henderson and Watercutty, they like your haircut. They think that that is something that could be a trendsetter. I'm not sure it will be, but they like the haircut. I got a nice personal note about that.
Well, they haven't seen it within these past couple of weeks, where it's unfortunately kind of growing back in like a mohawk fashion. It's not a good look.
You had a mohawk in high school. I saw the picture.
Yeah, that was intentional. A very poor choice, but this is unintentional. It's kind of just I think I got a couple of calyx in the back, and the way that they're kind of pushing it forward, it kind of looks like I'm like gelling it or something, but I'm really not. So yeah, I want sports to come back, and I hope we all get to see each other again soon, but not so soon that I don't have a chance to let this grow out a little bit.
What does the wife think?
She just ignores me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know how that goes.
Yeah. There's not a lot of talk going on here, even in a quarantine. And if it is, it's usually stuff that I don't want to hear about. All right, Ben, let's jump into it. There are signs that it looks like Major League Baseball could be returning at some point this summer. All signs point towards spring training 2.0. Couple of weeks, maybe week and a half, 3 weeks, and then maybe early July, July 4th. That's been the rumor going on out there. It seems that would make some sense. What do you think?
I think it's looking pretty good for my prediction. When we left spring training, I thought, okay, I think there could be games by 4th of July without fans in the stands. So that seems to be somewhere close to what baseball is targeting now. The key thing to me, and there are a bunch, but one of the things that, you know, I'll really start to feel good is when we know for sure that the players have received some sort of proposal from the league. You know, that's going to be a discussion now that players have to sign off on whatever it is the plan is, and people are going to kind of assume that happens, and hopefully it does, but there could be some sticking points there. But all these potential plans, all these ideas that have been floated, it does seem like we are seeing kind of more of a realistic approach, a streamlining as we get toward kind of the late part of this month, where I think that's when we'll have to have some of these details ironed out. But as states have started kind of easing back into, you know, trying to get back to some sense of normalcy as much as their individual, you know, state's situation allows, I think you're going to see some more realistic notions of teams playing, not necessarily in one state like Arizona or two like Florida and Arizona, but maybe having, you know, areas that are not as hard hit as others host home games, albeit without fans in the stands. And I think players would be on board with that too. So there's still some questions to be cleared up here, but this does seem more realistic than some of the early ideas that we heard. And I think that's encouraging.
Well, let's jump into some of those questions. You mentioned how players have to sign off on it, and that means an agreement with money. That can always be a sticking point. So you never know if that would come into play with this, which I'm sure it will. I think, and that's one question, so I'll have you address that, but I think the biggest question for me as a viewer, as a guy that covers this game, as a lover of sports, is that if somebody tests positive, what is the right answer? And I don't know. The KBO has said if a player, and that's a Korean baseball organization, if a player tests positive, then the league automatically shuts down 3 weeks, no questions asked. And in this case, I'm not sure what Major League Baseball would do. So two of the biggest question marks I have going forward would be money agreed upon, and they're going to have to redo that with no fans in the stands. And then two, what do you do if there's somebody that tests positive?
They're both huge questions. And, you know, this is going to be a tense discussion between the players and the owners, and it's going to be kind of conducted with the backdrop of what would be ahead, which is the negotiation of the next collective bargaining agreement. You know, the owners are going to say, look, look at the money that will be lost due to attendance and concessions and that kind of revenue, and understand that, you know, it's not fair for us to pay the full freight of players' salaries. And the players are going to turn around and say, nothing is changing on our end. You know, we're putting our lives to some degree and our health at risk by playing in the, you know, without a vaccine. And, you know, what we do is still the same, whether there are people in the stands or not. I think the players are going to be reluctant to give up much ground there in that discussion, but they're also going to be dealing with the public pressure of, you know, being a group that is arguing about money in the face of a country that is struggling with money right now. That is, you know, a lot of people are out of jobs. The unemployment is high, and it's going to be a lot of, you know, PR negotiation about where to stand and who's the bad guy here. But I don't think the public will have a big appetite for billionaire owners and millionaire players arguing about billions and millions. I just don't think it will go over very well. So the good news is that they came to a pretty quick agreement on what the stoppage looked like. It'll be a thornier probably discussion about what a resuming play looks like, but I do think that they both sides have to know that you really can't let it get too ugly, or else you really upset a lot of people who are in bad times and also just want to have baseball back as a sense of relief. You can't have Scott Boras writing opinion articles in the New York Times talking about how this country needs baseball back and how it needs to be part of the healing process, and then turn around and see Scott Boras's most highly paid clients saying they don't want to play if it means less money. Those two things don't really coincide. One thing that I wonder about, and I'm curious if this will come up. I don't know the ins and outs of exactly how it would work, but I wonder if there could be some sort of a delayed reimbursement for players. If there could be something negotiated where, hey, if times are tight for the league right now, as it will be for any league, could you get some sort of, you know, salary to be kicked down the line later, where everybody gets their full salary at some point in time, with more money going to those players when it's up and running and when baseball has been able to kind of build back its reserves a little bit. I'm curious if that will come up as an option.
What do you think about testing? I mean, it's got to be part of this. And if a player does test positive, that's what I'm very, very curious of what they would do. What do you think any sport would do in that kind of situation?
Well, I think that's the huge question. And again, I don't see anything on that. And I think it's partly because there's not a good answer. There's really two things. It's three things that make this really complicated. There is no vaccine. There is no, there is a way to have the virus and to spread it, to be contagious before you show symptoms. And the third part of this is that the testing still to this point is not as readily available as it needs to be in order to have teams test as they would need to in order to have big groups together again. And the other part of that, and it's just as an important part, is when is it okay for teams to have those kind of tests? Because I think we could all agree that it's really not right for teams to have those tests if hospitals can't have enough, or if health officials can't have enough, or experts cannot have enough. It sets a bad precedent. It's going to be ridiculed, and should be, if teams are testing at a rate, you know, to in order to have a season, and there's the hospital down a road that doesn't have what it needs to serve the public. So there's kind of two realms to that talk. There's the practical one, which, how many can you buy? How many do you need? How fast can you use them? How fast can you get more? Then there's kind of that ethical side of, is it right for, you know, when do we have enough tests that it's okay for these leagues to use them specifically to get games going again? And I don't know what those answers are. It's not a black or white area. It's more of a gray. I mean, everybody who's talking about this, whether it's soccer or NBA or NHL, just seems to say, well, there's going to be enough testing. You know, more tests are available by the day. Yet then if you ask, hey, do you have enough to go right now? They say, well, no, we don't have enough testing. It's not prevalent enough. So between now and a month from now, there's going to be so many more tests. It's okay. I mean, that's a little hard to imagine. I know they're ramping up the production of these tests as time goes on, but those are the big questions. Now, without the testing, you really can't have the big groups. And then even if you do have the testing, there's a good question of what happens if someone tests positive, because that's the thing that is going to potentially throw everything off the rails. A positive test, how do you control it? Do you send a guy home for 2 weeks? Do you send everybody he's come in contact with home for 2 weeks? And how do you really kind of nip it in the bud before it derails a whole team, which could derail a whole division, which could derail a whole season?
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. A full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.
Roster expansion, you're going to have that clearly. You know, if it's a short spring training, pitchers are not going to be like they were by the end of spring training, a normal spring training. So what do you think about roster expansion in terms of, do you carry a 40-man and make it like a 30-man available list night after night, game after game? Do you carry just 30 guys? Do you carry more pitchers, which you will have to? But, you know, this is going to be on the position players too. I talked to Paul DeJong the other day, and one of the things we talked about was just being on your feet as much as a position player is going to have to do. Where do you think the roster expansion goes at this point?
I think the more the merrier. You know, that does get the league into a discussion of pay again, because you're going to have guys around, you got to pay them. So that's, they're going to be, you know, but what you can't have is a shortage, and you can't be putting guys at injury risk. So the, you know, better safe than sorry, you know, and have teams reach down and bring all the players they need. You're going to have more pitchers, and you're going to have a pretty deep supply of players, because you're probably going to be playing games at a rate that they're not used to, and potentially also these double headers. You know, we've seen things along the lines of the seven inning double headers. The other thing that I haven't seen much on that I'm curious about is how the schedule could change in terms of, you know, amount of games played per week, but also amount of games in a series. To me, if I'm the league, and I'm going to rip up the entire schedule, obviously, because you're talking about altered divisions and everything, I'm going to figure out a way to minimize travel, because travel is expensive. Not, you know, throw in the health precautions of it. I'm looking at the expenses. If you're trying to make up for lost money, the less teams travel, the more money you save. If you have teams play their games against one, their assigned games against one another in one stretch, as opposed to making two trips, that's a pretty good way to cut back on spending. So I think there could be some, you know, cost efficiency moves to the schedule that come into play too. Now, I don't think they're even to that point yet, because they have to initially get things back. And I feel like so much of this is cart before the horse. And again, that's kind of why I pointed to MLS as a really key example, because what they're doing is going to be probably a better replica of what all the other leagues are going to have to do. I know we want to talk about the Korea Baseball Organization, what's happening in Taiwan, but that's on a different side of an ocean. That's an entirely different playing field when it comes to where, you know, the U.S. is with coronavirus. I think what MLS is quietly doing, it's not getting much attention, it's because it's really complicated, but bringing players back for individual workouts in an official capacity, which is not what baseball has done. Baseball has guys unofficially working out somewhere at the team facility. I mean, MLS is doing it with the flag of, this is our march to the return of games. I think that's what people should be paying attention to, because it reminds you how detailed it's going to have to be, and also how much is going to have to go right for this to not face another sort of setback.
Yeah, you mentioned MLS. It is pretty interesting to see the individuals on the field. They wipe down the ball, make sure it's cleansed, and guys are going through much of their routine, and even being interviewed by some of the media, they're wearing a mask. I mean, that's where we're at right now, and it might be the blueprint for sports here in North America.
I'm fascinated by what's taking place in Kansas City, and Sporting KC has been one of the front teams on this trend. So I think, like, you know, six teams in the first 2 days were able to do it. Not all teams are doing it. Not every player is doing it. It has to be. It's completely voluntary at this point. But players are reporting. They have an assigned parking spot. They walk up to the field in their mask and gloves. They're checked, temperature, some other tests, not an official test, obviously, but some markers. And if they're clear, then the mask goes off, the gloves come off, and they're assigned to a quadrant. Their two practice fields are broken up to 8 quadrants, and they're assigned, they have to stay in that quadrant for the length of their practice. They can do ball handling, skills, running. They don't pass the ball to one another. They don't interact with any of their teammates other than seeing them in that other quadrant. And when they're done, they don't go in the team facility unless they're rehabbing from an operation. They leave, they put their mask back on, their gloves back on, and that's it for the day. The whole place is sterilized and wiped down, and the next guy comes in. And that's how they're going to have to do it for a while. If they can get through that, then they can do the small groups and eventually the teams. But I'm curious, you know, if you listen to some of the comments made by MLS presidents and team owners, they're saying, we can't do these group workouts, we can't do team workouts until we have more testing. So baseball is going to be in that same boat. And it seems like, you know, until they're, every team has enough to test on a semi-regular basis in order to try to keep something from getting out of hand, then I don't know how far it gets. And the question that no one can answer is if all of this is just best case scenario. I mean, is all of this fingers crossed, hoping that no one tests positive? Because if one does and it starts to spread within a team, then I don't know how you don't have to get stopped from shutting it down again. I don't know what else you could do. You can't, you know, have a division that doesn't have a team operating. That gets out of whack pretty quick.
I have been intrigued by the response and popularity, the poll, whatever, of Albert Pujols. And he mentioned that ESPN, it was last weekend in an article, he said, well, you know, I know it's been kind of the assumption that I would retire after next season, which is the end of his 10-year deal. But I'm not so sure I'm going to do that. I'm paraphrasing now. But, you know, I'm keeping options open at this point. I've never said I'm going to retire. So that got people buzzing here about, well, what if the DH is in St. Louis? Would you entertain the thought of bringing Albert home? You wrote about it. What do you think about it?
Well, I credit you for the idea. I mean, ideas are hard to come by these days. So you tossed that out there and got me thinking. So I will thank you
for, no problem.
For the column. But and I see your point, and I don't underestimate for one second the appeal, the gravitas that Albert Pujols has in St. Louis. I wish that Albert would have found a way to stay. I wish it could have happened and played out here. I think it would have been a remarkable story. However, I think it would almost do more harm than good to his legacy in order to have him back for 1 year. And I say that as someone who is continually amazed by the 11 seasons that Albert Pujols had in St. Louis. I mean, it was an unparalleled decade plus of baseball. It made him, he was a Hall of Famer by the time he left, and he's continued to have remarkable milestones with the Angels. But when you look at what he's been, the hitter he's been for the past 3 seasons, I just think the Cardinals should have a more competitive DH. Albert, if you compare his numbers the past 3 seasons, Dan, his average has been Matt Carpenter. His on-base percentage has been Yadier Molina, and his slugging percentage has been Dexter Fowler and Colton Wong. That is not a DH that if the National League is going to adopt the rule, and I think we both are probably of the mindset that it will eventually here, perhaps as early as whatever 2020 looks like, I think you want a more impactful bat in that spot. And that's where Albert would be. You're not going to have him playing first base. Paul Goldschmidt's there for the foreseeable future, and he's there as an annual Gold Glove candidate. So it would be a DH spot only. And I think the Cardinals have in Tyler O'Neill or perhaps others better options there, or should go get them. The fun of it would be real. And, you know, seeing Albert reach some of those milestones, there's some big ones up ahead. If they were still available to him to get in a Cardinals uniform, that would be special. But there would be a lot of non-special, probably a lot of non-competitive moments mixed in. And I think for a team that is trying to contend every year, that wants to go win that next World Series, there should be better options there than a you know, a reunion. Now, I want Albert Pujols to come back. I want his number to be retired. I think he should probably make a strong case that he should have a statue outside of Busch Stadium. But I think the idea of a reunion tour would probably result in some ways, a tarnishing of his legacy as a Cardinals player more than anything.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. This team has been competitive under John Mozeliak. They have never, ever had a losing season. And so look at it 2 different ways. And I don't know which way is right. I'm just going to throw it out there because I think it's fun. One, you're right. His numbers don't bear out to be a guy that you pay a lot of money to be a designated hitter at the age of 42. However, on the flip side, we get through this, and let's just say there is a vaccine and fans are coming out to the ballpark. Old number five would fill that ballpark on a nightly basis. And that is something that I find incredibly interesting. It's the sentimental part of me that says, boy, that'd be neat to see him get these standing O's. And you're right, there's going to be some non-competitive moments, but there's a lot of juice. There's a lot of meat on that bone, man. It's still fun to talk about Albert being part of St. Louis.
It is, and last season showed that. That series that he played here with the Angels was magical, and he made good on it. I mean, I think he had a hit in every game. He hit the home run. He played great that year, that series, and it kind of launched a surge for him. He played pretty well after that for a while. So maybe, you know, maybe devil's advocate, maybe there would be some magic left in the tank for Albert in St. Louis. But to me, you know, Albert made, and I don't fault him for it. A lot of people do, and I understand why, but I never have. He made a business decision after that 2011 World Series, and he made the decision that he made. You know, the Cardinals, and we've talked about this with Yadier Molina, they're not shy about the fact that they're willing to give legacy guys a little benefit of the doubt, a little more than maybe other teams would for a guy who's stayed in the Cardinals uniform. I think Matt Carpenter is an example of that. At times, Adam Wainwright has been. I think Yadier Molina will be. But Albert doesn't get that same treatment because he made the decision he made. He left.
Yeah.
And he made a lot of money. I think part of him probably wonders if what happened would have happened if he would have stayed. I think we saw that a little bit last season. And I know there are probably parts of the Cardinals that wonder what would have happened if he would have stayed.
Now everybody wonders.
They wouldn't be thrilled with having to pay that contract now. But if it would have resulted in two more World Series, maybe that comes out in the wash. And it could have. Who knows? But I think with Albert and the decision that he made, the Cardinals just treated the same way. It's a business decision, and they wouldn't bring in a DH for that spot with those stats over the past 3 years. And I think that's kind of how you have to look at it if you're the Cardinals moving forward, and it becomes a possibility. Reality is, I think Albert retires, man, when his contract is up.
I do too. Yeah,
and I think he's gonna. The question will be, and I think this is a really interesting thing: what happens with that personal services contract? And I could see him potentially negotiating out of that so he can be more involved with the Cardinals. I wouldn't be surprised to see that at some point.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of Scoops with DannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.
My man, Ben Fredrickson, covered a lot of college sports. The NCAA enforcement staff said Kansas basketball, their program, committed, quote, egregious and severe rules violations that significantly undermine and threaten the NCAA collegiate model, and alleged that Kansas Jayhawks coach Bill Self, assistant Curtis Townsend, quote, embraced, welcomed, and encouraged Adidas employees and consultants to influence high-profile recruits to sign with Kansas. You had the news with Louisville this last week that was under Rick Pitino. It is pretty amazing. Let's just call it what it is. This is not amateur sports, and it may not be ever again, but, man, it's something else when some of these reports come out and just the level that these guys were going to get to certain players.
Well, This is hard for me because I've been pretty vocal that I think the NCAA needs to adapt and evolve. I'm in for players getting more under name, image, and likeness.
I am too.
And I still very much want to see Kansas basketball get hammered. I'll just be honest. I mean, just because of the blatantness and amount of time that they have been above and beyond you know, what the rules in college basketball are supposed to be. It's the worst kept secret in the game.
Well, just stop calling them student athletes. Just stop.
Well, we can agree on that. And actually, we can say this, and here's how I'll make it make sense in my head more than just being a grudge against KU. Kansas and what's happening with these players who were, steered by Adidas, handlers and people getting payoffs. It's a perfect example of why all of this should be actually brought to the light and done in a way in which players, these student athletes, can actually get more from the process. Because when you have players who are being steered by middlemen and shady shoe representatives, and it's not just Adidas, the same things happen in all of them. You know, this just happens to be the case with Kansas and the relationship with Adidas. Unfortunately, what it happens is the money goes in the pockets of people who aren't the players or their families. It's these rogue, you know, boosters or coaches or agents who are all conspiring against each other. Sometimes the kid doesn't even realize which way he's being pushed. So allowing the students, you know, the students to be a part of it, to know, hey, I can talk openly with someone about what my, you know, sponsorship could be to play at this school, I think it would get some of this money out of it. But it is funny, you know, to see the NCAA on one hand saying, hey, we have to open up these players for sponsorships. You know, they can do this now. Meanwhile, trying to drop the hammer on a shoe sponsored school for finding ways to steer players. The sad thing about it, if you actually read the details of what Adidas was doing, it was using kids. And that's what it needs to get away from. They need to stop the use of kids, allow kids to be a part of the process, because their talent is worth value and always will be, as long as college sports is a $1 billion business. It's not going back, although we can probably have a discussion, you know, because of the coronavirus, of some of these things that need to be reined in. I mean, you've got federal, you know, some college ADs are asking for federal bailouts of athletics departments, and you look at the same programs and they're paying coaches they fired millions to not coach. I mean, everything is so far out of whack. And, you know, Kansas basketball is one of them. I mean, it's funny when you take a step back and look at it, why would some of the best players in the country on a year-to-year annual basis be deciding to go to, of all places, Lawrence, Kansas? I mean, why are kids from Chicago saying, I'll go play in Lawrence, Kansas? Now, yeah, Bill Self's a good coach, and Kansas has a great history. But, you know, think about that for a second. You're telling me that there weren't things that were happening that shouldn't have been happening under the rules? I think you have to balance it. Schools have to play within the rules, and the rules also need to change. And you can have both of those opinions. I mean, you can want Kansas basketball to get punished for doing things outside the lines with Adidas. And you can also say, hey, there needs to be a modernization of these archaic rules. But if you don't punish schools for breaking the rules willfully and then, you know, doubling down on them in a legal fight with the NCAA, then you might as well not have any rules at all.
If there's no students at a fall campus around the country, wherever that may be, and the virus may hit certain spots differently than others, and we know that, and that particular school says it's going to be dangerous to have students here, the quote-unquote normal student that's going there to get their degree, can you have student-athletes playing football in the fall, in your opinion, for that institution?
I think it's going to be a hard sell. Now, I think these college coaches are thrilled that all their presidents are coming out saying kids are going to be on campus this fall, because then it becomes possible. But yeah, I think it's going to be tough to be having full-scale practices with football players when you don't have lecture halls open, or you don't have, you know, when everyone's doing long-distance learning. So that's the first point right there. The other thing that will have to be discussed will be if they try to, you know, potentially delay the start of college football into the actual, you know, 2021 year, then you would be asking players to basically play two seasons within one. And there's a fair discussion whether to be had of if that's fair for players as well. So, you know, what I think you're going to see in college football is I think there will be certain conferences that push forward and try to have this season as much as possible, probably no fans in attendance. And there will be some conferences perhaps that include more schools and in more heavily affected areas that either scale things back or abstain. I think you could see this produce more of a division between the haves and the have-nots. Alabama football can come up with as many tests and as many precautions and do whatever it can to field a team. The SEC will do whatever it can to have a football season. And the SEC, you know, will have a football season, and it doesn't care if no other team, no other conference in the Power Five has one. It's willing to go it alone, and it might. I think you'll see most of the Power Five conferences get in on this and try to make it happen unless they're told not to, and unless they're told they're not allowed to. I'd be curious about the Pac-12. You have maybe, you know, some more left-leaning states there, some more states that are severely impacted by coronavirus, and to be curious how schools, you know, in the New York area handle it. But I think especially in the Southeastern Conference, you're going to see teams say, hey, we're playing this fall, and we're not going to take our direction from anybody but ourselves. What would be really interesting is if the NCAA tries to have a say in it, and we could, you know, in the grand scheme of things, this could be another kind of big dividing factor between the top of the college sports world and the everybody else's.
Honest question. If you said 2 weeks from now, Florida and Georgia are going to be playing a football game and they're going to play in the swamp, how many people do you think would show up?
Oh, I think a lot. I think you'd have a lot more closer to full capacity than not.
Is that right?
I don't have any doubts about that either. I mean, you know, I got a kick out of that survey that came out a while back. I believe it was done at Seton Hall, and it said, you know, X percentage of people will be reluctant to go to a game until there's a vaccine. And I thought, man, that number seems really high. And then I've seen ESPN since put out another one. I just think in that area, I mean, look at Georgia, which is already, you know, was the first state to send people back out there. I'm not arguing whether it's right or wrong. Everybody has their own opinions on that. I think it was probably a little premature personally, but I'm telling you, you know, there are states where college football would be worth the risk for a lot of people to go to. Now, maybe it wouldn't be a sellout. Maybe they would see a dip. But if they opened it up, I think people would go. I think with fans, it's going to be more about keeping people safe than it will be about, you know, convincing them to come back.
I would agree. Ben, as always, great stuff. Always fun. Hey, we don't even have sports, but yet, you know, we talk about all kinds of things. There's still stuff going on. So get your thinking cap on, get down to writing, start pounding it out on the keyboard, because I want to wake up and have something to read.
I got you. Yeah. And if you have any more ideas for me, just be sure to send them my way.
Oh, I got plenty. When we get done with this, I'll send you my ideas. You may not like them, but I want to see them in print. Okay.
Sounds good, brother.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts. Think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.